You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 213 by Rudolf Steiner, 13 lectures, translated by Elizabeth Marshall, entitled Human Questions and Cosmic Answers. This is Lecture 5, given in Dornach on the 2nd of July, 1922. In these last days I have described for you the relationship of humanity to the environment as seen when we turn our gaze away from the earth and out toward the world of the stars, the planetary world. Today I would like to enlarge on this, at least aphoristically, with some observations and experiences which show the relationship of human beings to their immediate earthly environment. We tend to look at what surrounds us in a kind of homogeneous way, and arrive thus at a quite unreal concept of existence. I would like to remind you of what I have often mentioned here to clarify this point. When, for example, we look at a quartz, from our earthly point of view we can say that this is an object grounded in itself. In the self-containedness that the quartz presents to us, we can only ever see in a certain way just this self-containedness. However, this is not the case when we pick a rose, for example, and put it in our room. Within earthly existence, this rose with its stem is inconceivable. We can only conceive of it growing on the branch of the rose bush with its stalks and roots. Hence, when we mean to speak realistically, we should not call a rose an object in the same sense that we do a quartz. Speaking realistically means we have to include only those objects which can exist comparatively in and of themselves. Of course, looked at another way, the quartz cannot be seen as something existing in and of itself, but that would be from another aspect. The standpoint of a simple observation of earthly existence offers us a very different concept of existence for the quartz than for the rose. Unfortunately, such things receive very little consideration. This is why human thought is so unreal, and it is so very difficult for human beings to link what must be said from the point of view of spiritual observation to explicit concepts. They would be able to arrive at explicit concepts if they would observe the simplest things more as I have just described. Now, if we look at the earth, the immediate environment of human beings, we find at first on the surface various kinds of soil. Here, if you look around you, in this part of the world, you will find chalky soil. If you move southward, you will find shale. For now, I want to stay with these two main soil types, the chalky limestone formation, which you can observe here in the region as Jura limestone, and the shale formation, where the stone is not so densely packed as is the chalk formation, where it is more slaty. Just think of slate, or even gneiss or mica slate and so on, which can all be found in the Central Alps. In earthly existence, these are very significant antithetical states, the shale formation and the chalk formation. Looking at these rock deposits, as they are also known, contemporary science attempts to explain them from a solely mineral physical point of view. No thought is given to the fact that the earth is a whole. Let us look at what the science of geology consists of today. Look at the various soils. Look at the various ores, metals, and minerals in general embedded in these soils. By looking at the earth in this way, a geological way, we regard it as if there were no plants or people living on it. This kind of observation of the earth that geology makes is really just the same as if we looked at a human skeleton on its own. If you look at a human skeleton in isolation, you really have to say that actually this is not a being in and of itself. Nowhere in the world could such a skeleton develop just for itself. It can be the leftover rest of a total human being, but it could never have developed without the corresponding muscles, nerves, blood vessels, and so on. So, we should not regard a human skeleton as a self-contained existence, or try to explain it out of itself. For someone who thinks not just abstractly but realistically, it is impossible to understand the earth with its various rock formations without taking into consideration that the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, and the realm of human beings belong as much to the earth as do the muscles, the blood, and so on to the human skeleton. So we have to be clear that to look at the earth geologically means that from the outset we relinquish any search for reality. We would not arrive at anything real. We would arrive at what in reality can only exist within a planetary being, when this planetary being also contains the worlds of plants, animals, and human beings. When we first look at the shale formation, which I would like to call part of the skeleton of the earth, then we see that to all appearances it is considerably different from the chalk formation, which is in itself very compact. And if we use those methods I have used in the case of the greater contours of earthly development in my title, Occult Science and Outline, then in fact we have to trace back the difference in the shale formation and the chalk formation to their respective relationships to the existence of plants, of animals, and of human beings. We have to look at how the soul spiritual of the earth influences the rock formations. You cannot understand a human skeleton when you leave out the will nature of human beings, and you cannot understand the shale formation or the chalk formation if you neglect the tasks these formations have in relation to the soul spiritual of the earth's existence. And there you will find an intimate relationship between the shale formation and the realm of plants, between the chalk formation and the realm of animals. Of course, as the earth is now, the rock we find in shale is also to be found in plants. We can find stone or minerals in the animal kingdom in various forms according to their origins. However, this is not as important here as is the question of how, for spiritual observation, for spiritual experience, the plant being, all the plant beings of the earth, reveal their relationship to the shale formation in their own particular way. To illustrate this, I would have to sketch it as follows. The earth, there's a diagram, then the shale formation as a layer on it, schematically, and then the plants which grow out of the earth toward the skies. Spatially, the plants do not necessarily correspond to the shale formation, just as, for example, the thought, which has its basis in the instrument of the brain, does not need to correspond spatially to the big toe when it is moved. It is not a question of corresponding spatially, of being in the same place, but of trying to understand the shale formation not only by examining it chemically and physically, but with the help of spiritual research, as I presented in title How to Know Higher Worlds, or title Occult Science. Then you can see that if the forces contained in shale were solely at work on earth, then they would have to be connected to something living that develops exactly as does the plant world. The plant world develops only the physical body and the etheric body. These are both in the plant itself. When we come to the astral aspect of the plant world, then we have to think of this astral aspect as an astral atmosphere surrounding the earth. Plants do not have an astral body, but the earth is surrounded by this astral atmosphere. And in the process of blossoming and of bearing fruit, for example, this astrality plays a part. The whole plant world of the earth has a coherent astral body, which never descends into the plant itself, at most just a little, when the flower transitions to the fruit, but essentially floats above the vegetation like a cloud and stimulates the development of the blossom and the fruit. What is developing in these processes would collapse into itself if not for the radiating forces from the shale rock formations. So that in the shale formation, we have the quest to make the whole of the earth an organism. In fact, in relation to the earth, we have to view the plants as similar to our hair in relation to the whole human being, as homogeneous. and holding the whole organization of the earth together are the radiating forces coming from the rocks of the shale formation. At some point, these things will be confirmed by natural science. For example, it will be said that human beings have their physical body and their etheric body. The foundation of their whole organism is the plant. In fact, we can view humans as plant beings onto which the animal and human are superimposed. If we treat human beings in healthy or sick states with minerals from the shale formation, then even externally, we will be able to determine their effects. What I am saying here can be validated by spiritual observation. And it will be particularly significant to identify which symptoms in human beings are based on an overgrowth of the plant element. An overgrowth of the plant element in humans can always be treated with minerals from the shale formation. This is because all that belongs to the shale formation maintains the normal state, so to speak, of the plant element in humans, just as it normalizes the plant life of the earth. The plant realm would grow uninhibitedly out into the cosmos if it were not held together by the corresponding mineral forces of the shale formation. In future, we will be able to study a living geography and geology of the earth from this standpoint. When people have recognized that for geology, we should not just look at what is in a sense the skeleton of the earth, but at its connection with the whole of the earth being, with the organic, and with the soul spiritual of the earth. Now, all the plant world is intimately connected to the sun-like, to the influence of the sun. The sun does not just produce warmth and light through its etheric and physical elements, but within this warmth and light is also the soul spiritual. This soul spiritual is connected to what is incorporated in the shale formation. The fact that shale is in a sense distributed over the earth is connected to how the plant beings are spread out over the earth. The localization is not the most important aspect. We should not imagine that, for example, the shale formation must be present for the plants to grow out of it. The shale formation streams out. The rays are carried over the earth by various magnetic currents, and the plants live from this flow of radiation from the shale formation. Quite the contrary, plants cannot thrive where the shale formation has developed most strongly, since the plant's own forces would be drawn too strongly into the earth itself and would not be able to unfold. In this case, the forces that bind the plant to the earth are so predominant that the development of the plant, which also needs cosmic forces, becomes impossible. We can only really get a picture of the shale element in the earth when we go back to when the earth itself was in its sun existence in the sense described in Title Occult Science. Then the shale-like was being prepared within the earth, not fully formed as it is today, but in the making. At the time, the earth was in its sun stage. The physical aspect of the earth had only developed as far as a sprawling plant life. And really, we should say that when we look back from its present form to the earlier moon and sun stages of the earth, these are the earlier planetary stages. Then in the sun stage, neither plants nor animals could develop. Plants, as they are today, did not exist in the sun stage. But the earth itself had a kind of plant existence. And on the one side, the plant realm developed from this plant existence of the earth. And on the other side, through the hardening of the creative forces of the plant, the shale formation. So the shale formation is what has been retrieved from the plant existence of the earth as earth intellect. When we look at the chalk formation, however, supersensible perception reveals its intimate connection to what endows all animal existence on earth with independence. The plant cleaves to the ground. It is bound to the earth, as is our hair to our scalps. The animal moves about. However, the chalk formation is connected less to this moving about, which is a local movement, and more to the independent configuration of the animal. When you look at a plant, you can see that it grows with the root down into the earth. It sinks down into the earth, strives in a way toward the center of the earth, and then develops outward. In the plant's gestalt, we can recognize how it is completely regulated by its relationship to the earth. Of course, with more complicated plants, we have to provide a more complicated description, but it is essentially the same. The plant is not independent. Where it is rooted in the earth, it constricts itself and connects itself to the life of the earth. Where it projects out over the soil, it expands and spreads out in all directions toward the light. We best understand the form of the plant when we see it as intimately connected to the earth. In the basic outline of the animal form, for example, in the horizontal position of the spine or the downward tendency of the limbs, we can, of course, also find aspects adapted to earthly existence. However, the animal form is also independent of the earth. In each animal form, we can see that it is not adapted solely to the earth, as is the plant, but that it has something independent, something autonomous. The animal has broken away from the earth, as has its form. Supersensible perception shows us that all that I have talked about these last few days, in the sense of what shines down from the moon, the reflected light from the sun that streams down to the earth through the moon, the configurations that then flow into and form our thinking life, all this also brings the forms of the various animals. In essence, what is in the animal as indeterminate and formless will can be found within the range of direct sunlight. What gives the animal its independent gestalt, not adapted to earthly existence, all this drifts in, and we have to express it thus, on the light of the moon. All these particular configurations come down to the earth from the moon. The fact that the various animals are differently formed is because the moon traverses the zodiac. The moon exerts its formative influence differently on the various animals, according to whether it is in Aries, Taurus, or Gemini. This results in an interesting relationship between the zodiac and the animal forms themselves, of which the old dreamlike wisdom had a premonition. It is the forces flowing out of the chalk formations that draw down these forms, which would otherwise be lost as mists in the surroundings of the earth. The minerals of the earth send out not only radium rays, but much else besides. So, on the one hand, we have to look at the shale formation for maintaining plant life on earth, and on the other at the chalk formation for drawing down from the moon all that lives in the specific animal forms. Thus, through spiritual observation, we can appreciate how the shale formation of the earth is connected to the forms of the plant world, and the chalk formation to the forms of the animal world. We have to be clear that what we find in the chalk formation is also to be found in every detail of organic life. If we have the proper means, we can observe quite clearly that, for example, some people have a strong tendency to skeleton development. With this, I do not mean that they have a strong skeleton, but that they have calcification also in the rest of the organism. There are, so to speak, chalk-rich people and chalk-poor people. Of course, you should not think that this is as coarse as it sounds. You have to imagine a more homeopathic dose, but it is still significant. The more chalk-rich people are generally cleverer and capable of holding together and then differentiating very fine concepts. Now, you must not think that here I am describing the human being materialistically. That would never occur to me. Whether a person has more or less calcification in their organism depends on their karma. Both backward and forward, everything depends on the spiritual. However, a real incisive knowledge of the world consists not of talking about the spiritual and the material in generalities, but of knowing how the spiritual is creatively active in forming matter from out of itself. So a person who, through their earlier lives, is destined for an incarnation as a particularly clever human being, for example, as an extremely good mathematician, develops between death and a new birth soul spiritual forces that then lead to calcification. We need the calcium deposits in our organism in order to be clever. In contrast, we need silica deposits, which are to be found in shale or slate, in order to develop our will. We can only understand matter when we always consider it in relation to the spiritual. So we can say that the chalk formation contains those rays and currents which lend themselves to developing not only the animal forms on earth, but also what exists in us as the material basis for our ability to form thoughts in ourselves. Outside in space, there are various animals. Inside, in our intellect, there are the thought forms. They are the animal forms transposed into the spiritual. The whole animal kingdom is at the same time our intelligence. The whole animal kingdom projected into the inside of the human being, so that it appears as our moving thought forms. That is our intelligence. And just as the animal kingdom outside needs the chalk formation for its configuration, so we need, in a sense, the fine inner calcium deposits, also a chalk formation, in order to be clever. Of course, this should not be excessive. If a human being secreted excessive amounts of calcium, then their cleverness would separate out of them. It would not remain with them. This would lead to the development of an objective cleverness, which would, however, not stick with this person. Everything depends on proportionality. And if we look deeper into this, then we will find it interesting how minerals have a certain significance in the lives of human beings, animals, and plants. Now, as we have just said, if we look at all the effects the chalk-like forces have on us, then we arrive at what needs structuring, at what helps us to become stable human beings. And if we look at what in us is related to the effects of silica, of the shale-like, then we see that this develops us into human beings who struggle against, who resist this solidness and dissolve it, liquefy it, and turn it into something plant-like. The human being is always a kind of collaboration between the chalk-like and the shale-like, meaning, of course, the inner forces found in the chalk-like and in the shale-like. Now, let us take a closer look at the shale-like. In much of the shale-like, we find siliceous rock, particularly in rock crystal or quartz. The forces found in rock crystal or quartz also flow and radiate within the human being. And if the human being had only these forces, which they absorb with the harder shale-like, into themselves, if to a certain extent they had only this quartz-like in them, they would be in constant danger of trying, with their soul spiritual, to get back to what they were between death and a new birth, before they set foot on the earth. The quartz-like forever wants to bring people out of themselves, to bring them back to their not-yet-embodied being. There has to be another force working against the one trying to bring humans back to their unembodied being, and this is the force of carbon. Human beings have carbon in them in various forms. Of course, carbon is seen by modern science only externally, only through the methods of physics or chemistry. In truth, however, carbon is what helps us to always stay with ourselves. Really, it is our house. It is what we live in, whereas silica forever wants to lead us out of the house and bring us back in time to before we were here, before we moved into our house of carbon. Thus the carbon and the silica in us are continually in conflict. But this struggle is where we live. If we only consisted of carbon, for example, the plant kingdom is based on carbon, then we would be bound only to the earth. We would not be able to have an idea about our existence beyond the earth. That we can know this is due to the silica element within us. When we comprehend this, then we can see what healing powers silica or quartz has. If a person is ill because they have a strong tendency toward the carbon, which is the case with all diseases related to deposits of metabolites in the body, then they need silica as a remedy. This is especially true when the metabolite deposits are in the periphery or in the brain. Then silica is a strong remedy. So you see, when we understand these things, when we see them from the point of view of an holistic knowledge, both natural and spiritual, which looks for the spiritual in all things material and finds the material in the spiritual, which is seen as the creative instance, only then do we find what really explains human existence, and also what we have to do when this human existence is malfunctioning. It is particularly important to pay attention to what exists in human beings as nitrogen-like, nitrogen itself and its various compounds. The fact that human beings have nitrogen in them enables them to remain open, in a way, to the universe. I can only sketch this roughly. Let us assume that this is the human organism, and there's a diagram. By having nitrogen in their bodies, human beings have gaps in which the laws of the body are suspended. Along the lines of nitrogen contained in it, the body ceases to enforce its own laws. Through this, cosmic laws can come in along these lines. The cosmic asserts itself along the lines of nitrogen in the body. You can say that to the extent that nitrogen is at work in me, the whole cosmos, up to the most distant star, works in me. What exists in me as the forces of nitrogen bring into me the forces of the cosmos. If I were not an organism containing nitrogen, then I would seal myself off from all the forces coming from the cosmos. And when I need to develop these forces particularly strongly, as for example after conception, when the human embryo, which is a recreation of the cosmos, is growing in the body of the mother, this is only possible because the nitrogenous substances open up the human being for the effects of the larger world, the effects of the cosmos. However, everything in the universe and in the human being is arranged so that no extremes develop. Everything working on its own would produce an extreme. If nitrogen were to unfold its whole power within the human being, then humans would fall out of themselves, not only through the silica-like, where they fall into their spiritual past, but also through nitrogen, which continually strives to spread out spiritually. Through nitrogen, humans would continually be passing out, becoming unconscious. They would not be able to maintain themselves in themselves. They have to be held in themselves. Now, it is always of interest how, when we observe something in nature or in human beings, significant factors play a double role. What is, on the one hand, in humans the physical imprint of cleverness, the chalk-like, is, on the other hand, the antagonist of the effects of nitrogen. Hence, we can say that in human beings, silica and carbon form a polarity on the one hand, and nitrogen and chalk a polarity on the other. The chalk-like in human beings enables them to repeatedly substitute their own organization for the cosmic that is attempting to work in them through nitrogen. The cosmic is trying to get in through nitrogen. There's another diagram. And what is in opposition to it from the human organism oscillates against it through the chalk effect. Thus, the cosmos is working in the body at various points and also being thrown out. And this is always an oscillation backward and forward. Nitrogen effects, chalk effects, nitrogen effects, chalk effects. So, you see, we can not only relate human beings to the world of stars, but also to their immediate environment. In the last edition of Title, The Gertianum, I emphasized in an aphorism that materialism as a worldview does not really come from an understanding of matter, but from a lack of understanding of matter. What do they know of carbon? They know that it appears in nature as coal, as graphite, and as diamonds. Then they describe the physical properties of these forms. But they do not know that carbon is what holds us in ourselves, so that we are a cohesive human organism, or that silica is constantly working against this trying to take us out of ourselves. We can only truly know matter when we also recognize its spiritual aspect, for wherever there is matter, spirit permeates it. Of course, we will not get anywhere if we get stuck in such a vague and woolly pantheism, saying where there is matter, there is spirit. Just as in life itself, where we only progress by looking at things from every possible vantage point, do we need to know more than just that chalk, silica, carbon, nitrogen contain spirit? That is obvious, but obviously not enough. We need also to know how the various substances are, in a sense, embodiments, materializations of spiritual forces. We have to be able to see how the chalk-like organizes human beings in themselves, and how nitrogen is always trying to permeate them with the cosmic. Plants, which always have to be connected to the cosmic, since they grow out of the earth toward the cosmos, need nitrogen for growth. And when we grasp this connection, then we are able to study the growth of plants in the right way. These things have first their cognitive aspect. We only get to know the world when we understand them. But they also have a practical side, and we get stuck in the most primitive worldview if we neglect to look at things in their larger context. We also need to go into details and look at how the necessary nitrogen compounds are incorporated into plant growth. Now, you know that this is a very significant area of study, but agriculture can only really be studied properly through spiritual science. Spiritual science is the true science of reality. You see, all that I am describing to you today has to be rediscovered by spiritual science through the methods now used and those to be developed in the future. Older sciences only know these things through a kind of dreamlike clairvoyance. We have to achieve a fully conscious clairvoyance. I have often spoken about this. We cannot today just accept these things that humanity knew on the basis of their very different human organization. It is obviously just nonsense when people only want to study the old sciences, because they cannot help us to understand things. Just the opposite. We understand even the older phenomena only when we can illuminate them spiritually in the right way. Still, it is wonderful how, basically, through a kind of instinct, modern science is tending toward what was discovered through dreamlike clairvoyance. Let us take a specific case. The ancients supposed that everywhere in earthly, etheric existence there was lead. They attributed what was working in the human gestalt from top to bottom to lead radiation. They saw in lead, which is to be found all over the earth, something linked to the inner configuration of human beings, particularly to human self-awareness. Now, of course, the modern materialistic thinker will say that lead plays no part in the human organism. The old initiate would have responded, "We were not thinking of such a coarse form of lead as you were, but of a really fine lead, existing only as a force. This form of lead is to be found everywhere." This is what the old initiate would have said. What would the modern scientific researchers say? They would say that minerals exist which give off radiation. Included in these are those that give off radioactive radiation. We all know about uranium radiation, that there are certain rays known as alpha rays which radiate out so that at first there is the radiation, and then as radiation continues, there are certain changes. What is radiating develops a different atomic weight, relative atomic mass, as they say in chemistry, so that, in short, a transformation occurs within the radiating matter. Today, some people even speak of the revival of the alchemistic metamorphosis of matter. Now, people who have studied this say that within this radiation, something then develops as a product which is no longer radioactive, radium-G, Pb-206. And this has the properties of lead. So you can find out solely from modern natural science that there are radioactive substances, and within these radioactive substances is a force which is in the process of forming something. And behind all this is lead. So you see, the research of modern natural science is coming astoundingly close to the old science of initiation. And just as today, with the instruments of physics, they are discovering the properties of lead, so they will discover those of other metals. And then in time they will begin to realize what it means to say that we always find lead in the Saturn-like. You see that only through the vision of spiritual science can we understand what even natural science is discovering today, but which this latter is not able to put into the right context of what is already known. Now, another important aspect in this field is as follows. You know that the air, which belongs to our immediate surroundings, consists of oxygen and nitrogen. We do not really need nitrogen for our physical existence. We breathe in oxygen. This then transforms itself within us. Carbon dioxide develops, which we then breathe out. So we could ask the question, what is the significance of nitrogen, which is not chemically bonded to the oxygen, but exists more in a kind of mixture with the oxygen in the air? We cannot live in nitrogen. We need oxygen in order to live. However, without nitrogen, our I, capital, and our astral body would have no possibility to go on existing when they are outside the body in sleep. Between falling asleep and waking up, we would perish if we could not immerse ourselves in nitrogen. Our physical body and our ether body need oxygen from the air. Our I and our astral body need nitrogen. Nitrogen is generally what brings us into connection with the spiritual world. In the state our souls are in during sleep, it is the bridge to the spiritual world. Now take what I have said previously and what I have said here about nitrogen. Nitrogen draws the cosmic out of our surroundings. When it is inside us, it makes us ready for the cosmic. When outside us, it allows what is not of this earth to live in it soul spiritually. So, we have to say that the air is not mixed with a great deal of nitrogen to no purpose. It is mixed in because it is what deadens the physical and enlivens the spiritual during earthly existence. And when, from falling asleep to waking up, we escape from the deadening of the physical to another level of soul existence, then we immerse ourselves in the nitrogen element that forms a bridge between our soul spiritual and the soul spiritual of the cosmos. With our earthly personal existence, we are rooted in carbon. With our soul spiritual existence, in nitrogen. In earthly existence, carbon and nitrogen have this connection to one another and to human beings that I have described here. Now, look at carbon. It is in common coal, in graphite, and in diamonds. Those are the three different forms in which carbon can occur. What you see as carbon in black sooty coal, in a diamond, or in graphite, we carry within us in another form. Up to a certain point, we are a diamond. This holds us in our earthly house. That is where our soul spiritual lives when it inhabits the body. Nitrogen, which is to be found in the various nitrogen compounds, nitric acid and so on, in the saltpeter-like, this is what allows us to go out, what forms the bridge to the soul spiritual of the cosmos. This too has to be found through the new spiritual science. It was once known on earth, but only in a dreamlike way. The ancient initiates could see it through the old clairvoyance. As I have often said, we only have the appropriate respect for the old initiates when we rediscover things which we could not have recognized from the ancient lore. Only when we discover them ourselves can we appreciate them in the old traditions. Thus, when we rediscover these things, we learn to revere the ancient wisdom of humanity. Now, next time, I will speak about how this rediscovery is connected to the mystery of Golgotha. To do so, we need a certain prior knowledge of spiritual science and of natural science. So I think that what we have talked about today should help to clarify some aspects of cosmic and human existence in this regard. The end of Lecture 5.